So here we are operating in an area of operations which is almost like the beach. We're very close to the coast. Everything is sand, it's all flat. The trouble with this mission was that we had just gotten intelligence from a higher headquarters to say that they thought that there was an entire North Vietnamese battalion that was going to be operating in my area of operations. And of course, I'm the only unit there, so if they decided they wanted to attack somebody, it was going to be my guy. So we were particularly wired this night, and we dug our holes, and we dismounted our machine guns, and strung our wire, and put our flares out in the wire. We even put mines way far out away, and trip flares out there, so that we'd have extra warning. And we had 50% of our people awake at all times behind the machine guns, and it was very, very bad weather. The rain was coming down very hard, and of course the holes were all filled up with water. It was kind of a clay dirt mixture, and the water would not want to drain out very easily. So midway through the night, I'm off duty. I'm one of the guys that is not behind the machine gun, and I'm trying to get a little sleep, so I'm going to be fresh to pull another shift. And I've got to sleep in this hole, and I've got a little bedding material in there. It's kind of like camping material to make it a little bit softer, so you know, I'm not laying on the ground. But it's all wet, and I've got this over my head. It's just plain unbelievably miserable. We've been out there for 10 or 15 days already. You don't take a shower. You don't change your clothes. It's just absolutely miserable. So I'm laying there trying to get some sleep, and all of a sudden, a trip flare goes off. And of course, everybody immediately opens up with all their machine guns, and there's tracers flying everywhere. And I jump up out of the hole, and it's lucky that I did, because at that moment, somebody on a tank in front of me was trying to shoot a flare into the air. And when he shot it into the air, the wind was blowing so hard that the wind blew that thing straight back down. Now, this is magnesium. It is burning metal. That's what makes the flare. It went straight back down past him, hit the ground, took one bounce, and dropped right into my hole where I had been like 2 seconds earlier. And it burned up. It burned up all my sleeping gear, too. I mean, there went my little blanket. So we were firing away, and we were worried that, you know, somebody was going to start firing rockets at us and so forth. And we didn't get any more sleep all night. And I couldn't sleep anyways. I didn't have sleeping gear anymore. I mean, I wasn't only just in the water. And turned out, when we looked in the morning, we found tracks in the sandy ground that indicated some rotten DC dog had come up, sniffing around the outside of our little enclosure, and fired off a trip flare by accident. So there really wasn't anybody out there at all. But, well, at least it was a little bit eventful on my last mission. So the next morning, we, you know, packed up all our wire and all our flares and picked up all our mines and loaded up and went over to this river, and you had to cross the river. There were special boats that could carry the tanks and the armored personnel carriers, and we're going to be relieved by another platoon, and then I was leaving. That was going to be it for me. And we're sitting there waiting for the boats to come get us, and a helicopter shows up, and he says, "Pop smoke." And what you did was you threw out smoke of a certain color, and they would identify from the helicopter, and you'd say, "That's us." That's to keep the bad guys from throwing out smoke and, you know, luring a helicopter down. So, yeah, this helicopter comes down, and I'm a little worried because nobody goes in a helicopter unless they're big, fast. And by golly, it is the one and only one-star general in the entire area. This guy, we are so far north, other generals don't even want to come and visit him. This guy is like God up here. And he comes down in his helicopter, and here I am. You imagine what I look like after all this time out in the field. I have to go up and salute this general, and he's going to inspect my troops. Oh, I really needed this. I really needed this bad. And, he criticized this and criticized that and criticized the other thing. And I frankly never liked this general anyways, because he requested machine guns to be set on top of his command bunker in the middle of this huge base camp where they'd never use them, and our unit was always short of machine guns. I thought this was stupid. But I tried to, you know, be a good lieutenant until he got to this one armored personnel carrier, and the sergeant on this thing was an infantry sergeant, but he'd been assigned like 24 hours earlier to this armored personnel carrier. They'd flown him in, He didn't know anything about them, never seen one since basic training, and he didn't realize that there are certain things that you're supposed to do to keep this thing in, you know, supposedly combat-ready condition. That was a bunch of minor stuff from a combat point of view, but this general was just raking this poor guy over the coals. And, of course, I had the nerve to butt in and explain that this guy was brand new and we'll take care of it. It'll never happen again. And this general then raked me up and down the coals. So that was my last encounter with this general. I didn't dare ask him for a helicopter ride across the river so I could leave, because I was actually done. But before I actually got out of Vietnam, my battalion commander raked me over the coals because this general had raked him over the coals. And then my captain raked me over the coals because the battalion commander had raked him over the coals. And they wanted me to put a letter of reprimand in this poor sergeant's personnel file to stay with him for the rest of his career, to say he's incompetent because of what I considered rather minor infractions that were not his fault at all. And I refused to do that, and to tell you the truth, I did not care at that point in time, but it was going to be over my dead body. So he never did get a letter of reprimand, but everybody above me was pretty mad. I didn't get a really good officer's review out of that particular tour, but it didn't matter, because I was going back to the world, and I wasn't going to have to deal with these people ever again. Well, I finally did get my orders cut to come back home, get in the big Iron Freedom Bird, and I remember getting on the plane and thinking, oh, at last I get to go back to where you have what every combat troop dreamt of: round-eyed women, bottled beer, and flush toilets. I mean, this is what you really miss. So it was a long trip. It's 20 hours coming back, and you stop down in Japan and maybe someplace else, but you never went out of the airport, so you never really got the sense that you were coming back to good old home. And I came back in to Seattle, and we're flying in over the city, and it's nighttime. And I remember being struck, looking out of the airplane window, at this entire city, and it's all lit up at night. Now, you might not think this is very unusual, but where I had just come from, this different universe, you never lit a match at night without covering it so somebody didn't draw a bead on you. And it was just amazing that everything is lit up. And the first time I stood outside at night, where, you know, a parking lot or somewhere, everything is all lit up, I felt like a target. I mean, it was such a weird feeling. Now, I got over that fairly quickly. Although, to tell you the truth, if I hear one of these small helicopters go over, it still sends a little thrill down me. If I smell a diesel truck go by, I think of the diesel tanks that we had, engines, just that smell, it brings you back. But it doesn't cause me to lose any sleep or anything. But I will say it was very disconcerting to come back home, particularly since, remember, this is 1970. You're waiting for your plane to go back to your hometown, which for me was Cleveland, and you're in your military uniform with your short haircut and your outdoor tan, and everybody you run into has long hair, and this is California, remember, they dress weird, and you know, every other person is a hippie, and you really feel out of place. You think you're coming home, and you come to this place, and everybody looks at you funny. You know, you think they're all thinking baby killer or some such thing. And some people would say that. Kind of hurt your feelings. Never killed any babies. But you know, there were a lot of people that did not support the war. Now, as far as I am concerned, as we combat troops say, when I left, we were winning. That was literally too. So, in the end, we did not win that war. And you could argue whether or not we should have been in it in the first place. But frankly, that is not the concern of any combat troop that ever went over there. Their concern was making sure, A, they didn't get killed, and B, their buddy didn't get killed. And my job as lieutenant, I always felt, and this is why I volunteered, was not to go over there and be some kind of a hero, and indeed I am not. My job was to make sure as many of our guys came back as we could manage, given combat conditions. and I'd have to say I was pretty successful. Not 100%, I did lose a man, but it was no fault of his or anybody else's. It was just the brakes, one of those things, in combat. But we gave a good account of ourselves, and my unit was already always, they were always pretty well disciplined. So I think I made some sort of a contribution. Hopefully there are people wandering around now that wouldn't have been if I hadn't have been there. It's gotten very politically correct in the last 5 or 8 years to say to combat veterans from that war, thanks. But I'd like to remind you that you're not always popular when you come back from a war, particularly one like Vietnam. That's why people are so concerned now, politicians are so concerned, that if they're going to go send troops, they have got a lot of public relations support for the troops and for their actions, so that when these people come back home, they're well regarded and not, as some were, spit upon when they came back from Vietnam. Those are some of my experiences. There are a couple of dozen more stories I suppose I could tell you. Some of them were just awful, things you cannot imagine unless you've been there, and just adds to the weirdness of the whole thing. And I would never want to do that again, but I would never trade those experiences for anything.